Lesson 3. Outcomes. Describe the process of size up and risk assessment. Size up and hazard and risk assessment. Upon arrival at the incident, the IC assesses the incident's conditions to recognize clues indicating problems or potential problems. This process is called size up, the mental process of the incident commander considering all available factors that will affect an incident during the operations course. The information gained from the size up is used to determine the response objectives, strategies, and action options, tactics, that are applied to the incident during the planning and implementation stages. Hazard and risk assessment. Hazard and risk assessment is part of the size up process, focusing particularly on the dangers, hazards, and risks present at the incident. Hazard and risk assessment is a continual evaluation. It starts with pre-incident planning and continues throughout the incident response operation. The first IC who arrives on the scene conducts an extensive size up and then continues assessing hazards throughout the incident, altering the mitigation process to minimize risk and maximize benefit, as appropriate. During hazmat size up, the IC must consider all sides of the incident, figure 25.9. Hazmat size up is frequently complicated by limited information or an inability to access the scene due to hazards present. The IC's view of the incident may be limited by the size of the hazard area or location of the release, such as inside a vehicle or structure. In addition, limited or conflicting information regarding the product or products involved is possible. Initial assessment is based on anticipated conditions and updated as additional information becomes available. The following information needed for hazard and risk assessment can be obtained at the time the incident is reported. Number and type of injuries. Type of incident. Location of the incident. Time of day. Occupancy type. Product and container information if available. Equipment and resources responding. Weather. Once on the scene, additional pieces of the hazard and risk assessment are added to the information made available before arrival. The following factors may have an effect on the situation, such as wind direction, land use, topography, presence of victims, equipment access, available response personnel. The initial survey should consider the following questions, if appropriate. Where is the incident scene in relation to population, environmental, and property exposures? Is the incident scene inside a building or outside? What are the hazardous materials? Is it a terrorist attack or other criminal incident? What hazard classes are involved? What quantities are involved? What concentrations are involved? How could the material react? What containers are involved? How is the material likely to behave? Is it a liquid or solid spill or a gas release? Is something burning? What kind of container holds the material? What is the condition of the container? How much time has elapsed since the incident began? Can we anticipate where the product is going? Where will it be in 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes? What personnel, equipment, and extinguishing agents are available? Is there private fire protection or other help available? What effect can the weather have? Are there nearby lakes, ponds, streams, or other bodies of water? Are there overhead wires, underground pipelines, or other utilities? Where are the nearest storm and sewer drains? What has already been done? What would be the end result if no action was taken? When the incident requires a rescue, consider the following variables before rushing into a potentially dangerous situation. Risk to rescuers. Probability of rescue. Capabilities and resources of on-scene forces. Available escape routes and safe havens. Ability of rescuers to protect themselves. Difficulty of rescue. Possibilities of explosions or sudden material releases. Constraints of time and distance. After the material has been identified, responders can use references such as safety data sheets, SDSs, shipping papers with emergency response information, other written or computer references, and the generic information provided by the ERG to determine the health and physical hazards presented by the material. This will assist in determining the level of risk presented by the hazardous material itself. Manufacturers, shippers, and carriers may provide additional response information such as hazards, behavior, and other recommendations when contacted. Emergency contact information may be provided on shipping papers, pipeline markings, or other container markings. Emergency response centers such as Chemtrek, Canutec, and CEDIC will also contact manufacturers, shippers, and carriers. First responders should be able to predict, or attempt to predict, where the hazardous material may be going by using the ERG and other sources, such as plume modeling software, if available. Responders can also predict where the hazardous material is going given its physical state of matter, liquid, gas, or solid, and the environmental conditions present, night or day, wind or no wind, indoors or outdoors, figure 25.10. Responders can determine the concentration and spread of the material by using monitoring and detection devices. Given this information, responders can estimate the size of the endangered area and predict potential exposures, including, figure 25.11. Number of people. Buildings. Property. Environmental concerns in the area such as sewer drains, streams, lakes, ponds, and wells. Surrounding conditions. In addition to identifying hazmat containers and their contents, first responders need to survey surrounding conditions. While conducting this survey, first responders should identify relevant information, including, figure 25.12. Potential site hazards, such as overhead power lines, highway traffic, and rail lines. Potential ignition sources. Potential victims and exposures. Weather and time of day. Topography. Information about the building and building components. If indoor site hazards, hazmat incidents can occur anywhere and, often, the location itself will present its own hazards, figure 25.13. For example, if the incident occurs on a road or highway, responders will need to take protective actions against traffic and other highway hazards such as falls from overpasses, bridges, and other heights. If the incident occurs on or near rail lines, responders should protect themselves, victims, and property from passing trains and other rail hazards. Overhead power lines may have been knocked down during the incident or present a hazard to elevating equipment such as aerial apparatus or cranes. Other site-specific hazards could present potential contamination, environmental, or thermal hazards specific to the hazardous materials involved in the incident. Potential ignition sources. If the incident involves a flammable or combustible material, and the majority of hazmat incidents do, responders must avoid igniting these materials. Even if the material involved at the incident has not been identified, remove as many ignition sources as possible. Flammable gases and vapors can travel to unexpected places and tend to settle in low-lying areas. Many potential ignition sources may exist at the scene of a hazardous materials incident, including, figure 25.14. Open flames. Static electricity. Pilot lights. Electrical sources including non-explosion-proof electrical equipment. Internal combustion engines in vehicles and generators. Heated surfaces. Cutting and welding operations. Radiant heat. Heat caused by friction or chemical reactions. Cigarettes and other smoking materials. Cameras/cellular phones. Road flares. The following actions can ignite flammable/explosive atmospheres, figure 25.15. Opening or closing a switch or electrical circuit such as a light switch. Turning on a flashlight. Operating a radio. Activating a cell phone. Potential victims and exposures. Responders must quickly identify potential victims and exposures. Potential exposures include people, property, and the environment. The potential exposures will determine the need for rescue and protective actions. The nature and extent of injuries may give clues to the products involved and the hazards present, as well as determine the need for decontamination and medical care. Weather. If an incident is outdoors, the weather can dramatically affect how an incident progresses and is mitigated. For instance, if temperatures are below freezing, it may be impractical or impossible to use water for decontamination or dilution processes. Hot temperatures may cause liquids to evaporate more rapidly, producing more vapors or potentially raising a flammable material's temperature to its ignition point. Wind direction may determine where and how far gases, vapors, or solid particulates travel. Rain or high humidity may cause water-reactive materials to burn or explode. The time of day can also influence chemical behavior due to the conditions typically present. At night, winds tend to be lighter, so gases and vapors will not typically travel as far. Nights also tend to be cooler, so liquids tend not to evaporate as rapidly. In addition, temperature gradients may be significantly different in an area due to topography and bodies of water. Topography. Topography makes a significant difference in the considerations needed to determine the appropriate isolation distance. The ERG, green bordered pages, defines isolation distances. Topography is a factor in rural environments, such as flat plains or passes through mountains, as well as in developed environments such as wind tunnels between tall buildings and chemical processing areas. Topography may play an important role in where liquid and gaseous hazardous materials travel. If an outdoor incident involves a liquid, topography and gravity determine where the liquid might go, such as into culverts and ditches. These drainage areas may lead to the following environmentally sensitive areas that require protection. Streams and rivers. Ponds, lakes, or wetlands. Storm and sewer drains. Topography may also affect the travel of gases and vapors, with heavier-than-air vapors and gases following the contours of the land. When determining potential movement of hazardous vapors and gases, consider local thermal winds, upslope winds, downslope winds, breezes. Aspect, for instance, if the incident aspect is facing the sun, a rise in temperature may affect the material and slash or the container. Mountain or valley elevation, which can become an issue in relation to vapor density. Building information. For incidents occurring indoors, the following information may be relevant. Location of floor drains. Air handling ducts, returns, and units. Location and components of fire protection and detection equipment. Gas, electric, and water shutoff locations. Presence of potential backup generators. Situational awareness, hazmat incidents. Effective mitigation of any hazardous material incident requires that emergency responders establish and maintain situational awareness of the event. Situational awareness is more than just size up of the incident. Situational awareness is a continuous process that includes Figure 25.16. Size up. Interpreting signs. Assessing what is happening over the life of the incident. Predicting outcomes based on a plan of action. Maintaining situational awareness is one of the greatest challenges to emergency responders, as the process is also met with barriers such as competing priorities, distractions, and information overload. Failure to establish and maintain situational awareness of the incident is likely to result in a failure to achieve the desired outcome. Situational awareness is sometimes referred to as a process working at three levels. Level 1 perception, perceive the situation around us. Level 2 comprehension, apply our knowledge and past experiences to our perception and develop an understanding of the meaning of the situation. Level 3 application, take our understanding of the situation and apply it to the future, thereby predicting how and when the situation will change and what action is appropriate on our part. The loss of situational awareness creates an opportunity for errors to occur and improper decisions to be made. The following 8 factors may lead to the loss of situational awareness. Ambiguity, information received is confusing or unclear. Distraction, loss of focus of the original mission without appropriate rationale. Fixation, too focused on a single element of the situation to the exclusion of all others. This indicator includes personal concerns such as financial or family problems. Overload, tasks or information overwhelm us, or we attempt to perform all the tasks ourselves. Complacency, false sense of comfort based on a misconception of the hazard, risk, or situation, sometimes based on past, seemingly similar experience. Improper procedure, policies or procedures are violated or ignored without justification. Unresolved discrepancy, Two or more pieces of information do not agree. Lack of comprehensive hazard surveillance. Crew members become so fixated on one detail that they ignore everything else. Proper situational awareness depends on performing the following actions. Maintain effective communications. Recognize and make others aware of any deviation from standard operating procedures, SOPs, or policies. Monitor crew member performance. Provide information in advance of an operation or mission. Identify any potential problems or existing hazards. Communicate the desired course of action. Communicate the mission status continuously. Evaluate the situation for any changes continually. Clarify expectations of crew members continually.